We are talking today with John Stauber. John Stauber is founder and executive director of the nonprofit Center for Media and Democracy and editor of its quarterly news magazine, PR Watch. He has written numerous articles that have appeared in various periodicals and websites, including In These Times, The Progressive, The Sun, Alternet, and Common Dreams. He has appeared on a wide range of corporate media, including ABC, NBC, CBS, CNN, NPR, BBC, and the CBC. He has also co-authored 6 books along with Sheldon Rampton that include Toxic Sludge is Good for You, Lies, Damn Lies, and the Public Relations Industry, Mad Cow USA, and Trust Us, We're Experts, How Industry Manipulates Science and Gambles with Your Future. And he is here to talk about his new book, The Best War Ever, Lies, Damned Lies, and the Mess in Iraq. John, thank you very much for spending time with us today.
Thanks for having me on the program, Mike.
Begin, if you would, and tell us what was the motivation in writing your book, The Best War Ever?
The Best War Ever is the follow-up to a 2003 book that Sheldon Rampton and I did titled Weapons of Mass Deception, The Uses of Propaganda in Bush's War on Iraq. And Sheldon and I both work for Center for Media and Democracy, PRWatch.org. And for the last 13 years, our mission is investigating, exposing, deconstructing, analyzing propaganda, corporate and government propaganda. And after 9/11, we saw how the Bush administration immediately began exploiting the terror attacks of 9/11 to do something that these neoconservatives wanted to do, people like Wolfowitz, Rumsfeld, Cheney, even before Bush was elected, attack Iraq. So we were reporting on the sell job behind that war, and that became our 2003 New York Times bestseller, Weapons of Mass Deception. And the bottom line there is, look, the Bush administration knew, and every critical observer who would read something other than the U.S. press and see something other than U.S. TV knew that the arguments for that war were a crock. Saddam had nothing to do with 9/11. Saddam was not in league with terrorists, and Saddam almost certainly did not have a weapons of mass destruction program. And if the inspectors had simply been allowed to stay by Bush, who chased them out when he started his war, that would have been proven. Now that's all proven, and the administration admits it. The shocking thing is that today, in 2006, 1 out of 2 Americans, according to the July 2006 Harris survey, believe weapons of mass destruction were found in Iraq. And it's a very frightful situation when a government PR campaign can sell a war. The mainstream media, rather than challenging these false assertions, simply echoes them. And the public buys into it so deeply that even when Bush and Cheney, the CIA, the Pentagon now say in their finer moments, absolutely no ties between Saddam and 9/11, absolutely no ties with Al-Qaeda, and no weapons of mass destruction, half the American public believes they are found. So The Best War Ever is a bit of a sarcastic title, but it's also how this war was sold. This was going to be the war where we are welcomed as liberators, that would pay for its own reconstruction, that would be over, as Rumsfeld said, in 6 days, 6 weeks, I doubt 6 months. And instead, I'm old enough to remember Vietnam. I sort of cut my political teeth in high school on Vietnam. We're embroiled in a horrific disaster that, frankly, is doing more harm to our nation than the terror attacks of 9/11, which were a horrific event, but which were containable. And as people like Richard Clark, the national security advisor for multiple presidents, and others have pointed out, Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden would have loved to see the United States attack Iraq, get mired in a horrific situation there, and there we are. So this is The Best War Ever, and we analyze what happens when you believe your own propaganda and you go to war, and what happens when the people who did that are still in power, not being held accountable, and the propaganda campaign is still working.
So it's your belief that the Bush administration actually is believing its own propaganda?
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, propaganda is an interesting phenomena. By the way, I want to put in a plug here. Go to the best war ever, thebestwarever.com, because one thing we've done for this book to overcome the mainstream media blackout the issues I'm discussing is we put up a little 4-minute video with clips from the Bush administration highlighting points in the book. So thebestwarever.com. But one interesting thing about propaganda is that often it most affects the propagandists themselves. They stick to their talking points, they repeat this stuff over and over, and they begin to believe it. And then when the question is asked, well, when Condoleezza Rice just recently said, in fact, on September 10th on Fox, that despite all the CIA reports that are out there publicly saying there's no connection between al-Qaeda and Saddam, we know there's a connection, and then has nothing to show for it. Is she know she's lying? Does she not care she's lying? Or is she just sticking to her talking points on the Fox network, throwing red meat to people who believe the weapons of mass destruction were found and probably believe overwhelmingly that Saddam had something to do with 9/11, as did most people who voted for Bush in 2004? And it becomes really difficult to say, well, who at the top really believes this stuff that they're spinning out that critical observers know is false, but that the public believes because the media doesn't contest it adequately?
So can you talk about specifically who the different players and companies are that are spinning this propaganda?
Yeah, let me talk about some things post-book, because, you know, this book was put to bed this summer, and there have been developments recently. There's a PR firm called Russo, Marsh, and Rogers that we mention in the book, and they run a pro-war advocacy group called Move America Forward. And if you go to their website or you just Google Russo, Marsh, and Rogers, or Google Melanie Morgan, a San Francisco right-wing shock jock whose email address is at this PR firm and is the chairman, which is how she wants to be called, of Move America Forward, you'll see just this vitriol that basically anyone who opposes this war is anti-troops, anti-American, and with the enemy. Russo, Marsh, and Rogers ran truth tours to Iraq, where they would take people over, journalists, quote-unquote, mostly right-wing radio shock jocks, to get out the true story to the American people, how actually things are going swimmingly well in Iraq, and if only this traitorous liberal media would wise up, that's what would be reported. They also have a contract with the Kurdish northern state of Iraq, and they're running right now in fall of 2006 TV ads from Iraqis thanking America for the war. And they are perhaps one of the leading Republican PR political machines in the state of California. They did a lot of work for Schwarzenegger. So here you have this conglomeration of Melanie Morgan, who, by the way, in the summer of 2006, actually said on a radio program that Bill Keller, the executive editor of the New York Times, should be sent to the gas chamber for revealing that the government is spying on Americans. You know, you've got this PR operation, Republican firm getting money from Iraq, running thank you ads with that money, mobilizing a campaign. That's just one example. I think one of the most important examples is the Iraqi National Congress. This was started in early 1993 under the first Bush and then Clinton administrations. And it was created with CIA money, lots and lots of it, through a PR firm called the Rendon Group. And what they wanted to do is create a group of Iraqi dissidents who would help to overthrow Saddam Hussein. Ahmed Chalabi, a very interesting character who's a wanted felon for bank fraud in the country of Jordan, was made the head of the Iraqi National Congress. And this was a pretty inept group. They sucked up and spent lots of money, didn't accomplish much. But in the late 90s, the neoconservatives, people like Bill Kristol, Wolfowitz, Cheney, Rumsfeld, the founders of the Project for a New American Century, James Woolsey, all these guys were part of that, who were advocating taking out Saddam, they embraced the Iraqi National Congress. And immediately after 9/11, the Iraqi National Congress, remember, created by our CIA, paid for with our tax dollars, went out and looked for ties between Saddam and 9/11 and evidence that Saddam had weapons of mass destruction. They didn't care if this information was accurate. They wanted people they could provide to the U.S. news media who were going to say, I'm a defector from Iraq, I have firsthand knowledge, Saddam has nuclear plans, I worked on them, I have firsthand knowledge, Saddam is training Al-Qaeda terrorists, including people involved in 9/11. And they spread this stuff all through the media, and it just echoed and echoed. Judith Miller of the New York Times took this propaganda and spread it all over the front page. They spread it into the media in other parts of the world, and it would bounce back into the United States. Ahmed Chalabi, after the U.S. invasion and overthrow of Saddam, actually sat behind Laura Bush during one of the president's State of the Unions. Today, he's in the Iraq government, and he's now wanted for questioning by the FBI because he is thought to have given U.S. national security information to Iran. He's pro-Iranian Shia, and he's cementing ties between the current Iraq government and Iran. This was our man in Baghdad. This was our own money through the CIA creating a front group that propagandized us into the war. The most astounding thing you can imagine. Other firms like Burson Marsteller also were paid by money, tax dollars, through the Iraqi National Congress to propagandize us into war. So, you know, it's just overwhelming when you see how this war was sold, and that's the story of our two books and our most recent one, The Best War Ever.
Any sense for how much money is being spent on these campaigns?
Yeah, there are new contracts being let all the time. There's a group called the Lincoln Group that is placing fake news written by the U.S. military into papers in Iraq. And they're just one of a number of groups that in 2004, 2005, 2006 have received additional funding, probably in the hundreds of millions of dollars. Of course, you're not supposed to know about this. When it came out in December of 2005 that the United States military was writing news stories that the Lincoln Group was having translated into Arabic and planted in papers in Iraq, it was a scandal. And even Rumsfeld said, well, you know, we're going to look into this. This shouldn't be happening. Well, it's still happening. They did look into it, and they concluded that this is just fine. Actually, there's a very interesting article that just went up on Alternet in September of 2006. An intern who was hired by the Lincoln Group. It's like a Three Stooges story about how he worked to do this and all the waste of money and the ineffectiveness. So, yeah, there is a tremendous amount of money being spent on planning stories in Iraq, but the real success of this propaganda has been in the United States, where, as I said at the beginning, today, according to a July Harris survey, one out of two Americans, half of our fellow citizens, believe weapons of mass destruction were found. Therefore, the war was justified. This is just stunning. Why is this? It's because on television in April and May of 2003, after the March 20th invasion, weapons of mass destruction were being found all the time. If you remember when you watched Fox, CNN, ABC, NBC, CBS, if you read Judith Miller's stuff in the front page of the New York Times during the invasion, when no one dared criticize the policies of the United States, there were all sorts of Fox News alerts, and we go on for pages in the book. And it wasn't just Fox, it was all the media, because they wanted to be the first to announce the finding of the weapons of mass destruction that the administration said were absolutely there, and we absolutely know where they are. So that is why, you know, half of Americans today believe they were found, because the media sold them the idea that, of course, the media planted in the first place as it echoed Bush propaganda, and we've deluded ourselves. How can we even have an honest debate about U.S. foreign policy in the Middle East, about Iraq, any sort of public debate, when one out of two of us thinks these weapons were found?
And part of the problem with those stories about finding weapons of mass destruction in Iraq was there's no follow-up afterwards.
Absolutely not. There's, you know, media hates running corrections. Media hates criticizing media. And so you've got this big, honker, blaring story on the front page of the New York Times by Judith Miller, or on the networks, you know, news alert, news alert. Well, we've found what we've been looking for. Here's the mobile gas trucks, you know. News alert, U.S. soldiers are ill, and we think this is it. There's a white powder found. You, report after report, you know, just chilling, dramatic reporting. 100% of it, 100% wrong. And in many cases, no correction. And this is an interesting thing, too. If you go to the web, for instance, and you search Salman Pak, S-A-L-M-A-N-P-A-K, this town in Iraq, there were stories planted by the Iraqi National Congress, picked up by journalists all over the United States about how this was a terrorist training center, and Saddam was even training terrorist cells who were in the West, including terrorists who were linked to 9/11. 100% false, and yet that stuff sort of lives on the internet, and if you search that, you regurgitate and find these old stories. So it's a really sad comment on how powerful propaganda is in our society and how detrimental it is to our democracy. And we have laws on the books, such as the 1948 Smith-Mundt Act, which say it's illegal to spend U.S. tax dollars propagandizing the American people. But those laws are obviously inadequate. They're not enforced. And one thing we have to do now is begin to push for better safeguards against this happening. But it's very difficult in a degraded, propagandized environment to do that. And we see how successfully the Bush administration is sort of pulling out the tricks that won the election for the Republicans in 04 and in 02, here in 06, beating the terror drum, driving up Bush's popularity and conflating Iraq and the so-called war on terror. I mean, remember, attacking Iraq had zero to do with the attacks on 9/11, and people like Richard Clark and others coming out of the CIA and the State Department and the Pentagon have said attacking Iraq was the worst thing that could ever happen because it took the U.S. eyes off actually dealing with al-Qaeda and terrorism, and has so far spent $300 billion. The eventual price tag will probably be well over $1 trillion, miring the U.S. in a situation that's only going to get worse and is almost certainly lost.
So can you tell us about the difference between when an administration hires public relations firms to do mm-hmm. propaganda and when it uses its own military psyops to change people's minds?
Well, it's all integrated. You know, if you look at, like we did in our first book, Weapons of Mass Deception, the team that sold the war, it was a really seamless PR operation that involved people like Ari Fleischer, of course, at the White House, Tory Clark, former head of the Hill & Knowlton firm in Washington, who was at the Pentagon and came up with this brilliant PR scheme of actually embedding U.S. reporters with the troops during the invasion, which resulted in very understandably pro-troops reporting and actually a very limited view of what was really going on in the attack. Tony Blair had his counterparts, and they had their talking points, and then they were also using firms like the Rendon Group. You know, when that Saddam statue toppled, I believe that was April 9th, 2003. And for 2 hours, worldwide, billions of people were watching this live broadcast of what appeared to be just what Cheney had predicted, the United States being welcomed as liberators and the Iraqis pulling down the statue of Saddam with a lot of help from a U.S. tank and military, by the way, in Fyrdov Square and dragging this statue of Saddam and breaking it into bits. I mean, that was one heck of a triumphant PR moment. And the fact is that it was filmed like a Hollywood production. All the news people who were there were taking feeds from the Pentagon. If you pulled those cameras back, as independent journalists pointed out, because a Reuters photo that was up online showed this, Fyrdov Square was surrounded by U.S. tanks. The barrels were pointing outward. There was almost nobody there except for maybe 30 or 40 Iraqis, and it was a staged U.S. Army PSYOPs event. We talked about it in Weapons of Mass Deception. At that time, we didn't know exactly who staged it. Since then, the U.S. Army itself has been analyzing and talking about that as a psychological operations event. And we mentioned that and documented in The Best War Ever. So here you go. Now, who did that? Who trained him to do that? Well, it's all part and parcel of a massive networked PR campaign. And at the top, you've got about a half a dozen to a dozen key operatives in London with Tony Blair and in Washington with Tory Clark organizing it. And again, what message did that send? Well, the message was we were welcomed as liberators. The war was justified. And then, of course, at the same time were these 100% erroneous and false reports coming out. And by the way, we're finding the weapons of mass destruction. So I say this over and over because it sort of helps explain this phenomena I keep going back to, that 50% of the U.S. public today believe the weapons were found. And I think if you asked, was Saddam involved with 9/11, you'd probably find a similar number. And what's even more fascinating to me is that in January of 06, it was 30-some percent believed the weapons of mass destruction had been found. The number has gone up. Why is that? Well, it might be because in July, just before this survey was done, Republican Senator Rick Santorum from Pennsylvania held a news conference saying, "We found the weapons of mass destruction." And he pointed to information in Pentagon reports about finding tiny little bits of their weapons program from 15 years earlier. When they were a U.S. ally, when we were helping them, when Western companies were supplying the chemicals for their chemical biological warfare program, when the evil horde Saddam, and he was killing his own Kurdish Iraqis with chemical biological weapons, he was a U.S. ally. And Colin Powell and the Reagan and Bush administrations, first Bush administration, were helping to cover that up and keep him in power. And so, remnants of that ancient program were found. The Pentagon, right after Santorum's news conference, put out a statement that said, "Senator Santorum, is simply wrong here. We haven't found weapons of mass destruction. This is exactly, remnants of the old program that, yes, he was forced to shut down." But again, what was the story that went out on news media? Weapons of mass destruction found. So that might explain the jump. Once people really buy into a propaganda campaign, especially one where they think war is justified, and once the war is managed in such a wonderful way where we don't see what's happening over there the way the rest of the people in the world do, because our mainstream media reports are sanitized, we almost never see dead or dying U.S. soldiers, for instance. And we write about that in the book, and that's on purpose. Of course, there was a very brave woman in Seattle who, just for patriotic purposes, wanted to get out pictures of returning coffins here and did, and lost her job because of it. The president of the United States has never been to a single funeral for any soldier who died in Iraq. And he's not going to go because he doesn't want to draw attention to what's really happening in this war.
So what do you think is the reason that the corporate media and corporate news, to be specific, which pretty much lives by the rule of if it bleeds, it leads, would give so little attention to images coming out of a place like Iraq?
Two reasons. One is the corporate media became cheerleaders for this war in 2001, 2002, 2003, something we write about in Weapons of Mass Deception. Inside the media, they actually referred to it as the Fox effect. Fox News, after 9/11, literally wrapped itself in the flag, began beating the drums of war, began just echoing the most jingoistic assertions and claims of the Bush administration, and their ratings went through the roof. And the other networks said, "Gee, we want an audience too. Look at that. That's success. Let's follow it." And most Americans get most of their news from television, so you get this dynamic going. We report in our book how papers in the U.S., for instance, if they show U.S. casualties or civilian casualties, for that matter, in Iraq, we have a whole chapter on not counting the dead. There are over 100,000 Iraqis, conservative estimate, dead since this war was launched in 2003, and you know, that's kept out of our news media too. When news media does write about or show deaths or suffering of U.S. military or Iraqi civilians, they get hammered by a well-organized right-wing constituency and called traitors. And, of course, the argument is made over and over, this is a time of war. We have to follow our president. We have to trust our leaders. And anything that's critical of the administration or the war is going to guarantee the defeat of the U.S. So if you're highlighting the deaths and suffering, the cost of the war, the tens of thousands of civilians killed, then you're aiding and abetting the enemy and guaranteeing our defeat in Iraq. Those are powerful arguments. So you've got, on one hand, really the economic incentive to cheerlead for the war because it was so popular and people want to hear, you know, the good news and why we have to go to war. Then you have also, I think, the embarrassment of, oh my God, we got it wrong. I think there's a lot of disgrace and embarrassment among working journalists who realize that the U.S. media was a propaganda machine for the war, and people like Judith Miller of the New York Times were allowed by her editor to print story after story based on Iraqi National Congress propaganda that turned out to be false, all of it, about weapons of mass destruction. And so you've got a number of explanations as to why the U.S. media has done such a poor job. But the reality is, in a democracy, you've got to have a really courageous press. And you might be reporting facts and truths that are unpopular. You might get hammered by the government. You might lose your advertisers. You might get screaming calls from angry people who don't want to hear this information. But you've got to get it out. And if you don't have an independent, aggressive press that challenges government propaganda and gives the news to Americans that we need to make smart decisions, well, you end up with the sort of messes that we're in.
Only a couple minutes left. So what would you like to see happen to address the numerous problems that you bring up in the book?
Well, I think for people who oppose the war, and let me just say, by the way, the anti-war movement, the critics of the war were right, completely right, and the pro-war advocates were wrong, completely wrong. You know, even though we didn't see critics of the war in the media, because as we report in the book on various studies, they were censored out, the people have said, no, we can't go to war. No, this is going to help al-Qaeda. No, this is going to be a horrific quagmire. We're right. And the people who said, he has weapons of mass destruction, we've got to go to war, we're wrong. We're not seeing that said anywhere either. I think what people who oppose the war have to do, first of all, is vote for candidates who are going to support peace. Whatever party, if you care about ending the U.S. occupation in Iraq, if you care about changing U.S. foreign policy, then you've got to find and vote for candidates who are going to work for that. That's extremely important. And that's why I'm going to plug it again. If you go to thebestwarever.com and click on that, you'll get our four-minute video. And one thing that we've done is we've come out calling for people to sign the voters' pledge to support candidates who will work for peace. I think the most important thing, frankly, is to educate our fellow citizens. When I'm on talk shows, it's just amazing how people will call in and say, well, how can you say that because the weapons of mass destruction were found? Well, how can you say that because Saddam was behind 9/11? And I'll have to correct them. But again, remember, most people in this country not only bought the lies and deception, they're still buying them and still believing them. And so what we have to do is bust that propaganda and do it sort of friend by friend, family by family at a time. And we also have to hold the media accountable because it would be nice, for instance, if the U.S. news media were so aghast at this massive misinformation that they planted in the minds of Americans that they really launched their own educational campaign to bring home the points that now George Bush admits, no ties to 9/11, no weapons of mass destruction, and no links to al-Qaeda. That's the fact. And everything else is fudging and spin.
All right. Well, I want to thank you very much for spending time with us today.
Thank you, Mike.
We have just been talking with John Stauber. He is co-author of the new book, The Best War Ever, Lies, Damn Lies, and the Mess in Iraq. And again, you can find out more about his work at the two websites, thebestwarever.com and prwatch.org.